We're switching to English so that it makes sense for Olaf, right? Yeah, you want to go ahead?
No, it's okay.
Okay. if you want to try, we can do it later if you want. Yeah. No pressure, no pressure now. Okay, so I think that the first thing that we should all do, you have introduced yourself already, Vivian, but I think it would be great for the entire auditorium to know who we have here, to have your introduction, Sophie, to know who you are and what you do at PNG, and then we'll go with you, Victor. So if you want to go ahead, Sophie,
okay.
Please.
Okay, so I'm leading marketing, as you said, for some the CMO for Europe, for PNG. I'm also leading the digital transformation of PNG, leveraging the 10 years I spent in the Startup Nation in Israel, where I learned that overall the opportunity ahead is certainly to partner and learn from the startup ecosystem. So that's what I'm trying to bring in and lead this transformation that is a fascinating journey.
Sounds like a challenge, right?
A journey.
An adventure.
Yes.
It is. And yes. What about you, Victor?
Well, thank you, Paolo. So does this work yet? So I Victor Matalanta, I run strategy for Santander Bank globally. And I also...
Does it work? No?
Now it is.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
You don't want to hear me. Not sure how this works.
Now it is.
Hello? Yeah.
I think if you take it off, it's easier.
Here?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. Want to try that? Hello? Okay.
Yeah.
I can't move my head.
Okay, maybe...
Technology.
Just hang it from my ear.
So, let's see if...
Now it works.
Okay.
Now it works.
No problem.
Do we have a microphone?
Maybe
yes.
We bring him a microphone.
We do have a microphone. Don't worry. We have solutions for absolutely everything. Muchas gracias. Mira. Analógico.
Okay. Well, I kind of like the idea of looking like Madonna, but now it's okay. So thank you. So I'm Victor Matarranz. I run strategy for Santander Group worldwide, and I'm also in charge of Santander Digital, which is... It's the area we have that takes care of the digital transformation of Santander. I've been there for 3 years, and before that, I had kind of the same role in Santander UK.
Great, thank you so much, and it's a pleasure to have the three of you here. I think we couldn't have a better panel to discuss how organizations are nowadays changing and adapting to this new digital context. I wanted to start off by asking the three of you a very specific question to make it easier for everyone to understand what is changing and how that is affecting companies nowadays, and is what are the two or three main trends that you think are affecting companies and governments in their transformation, in the way they want to adapt to this new digital context? For example, Vivian, from your own perspective at the White House, the three main trends.
Yeah, so the three main trends that we're definitely seeing is one, meeting people where they already are. So we know, for example, that the Latino community and the African American community in the United States over-index on social media and smartphone usage, as do young Americans. And so it's critical to go to the places where all people already are, you know, designing our websites as being mobile first or mobile ready. Building applications, using plain language, internationalization, foreign language. So meeting people where they already are is critical. Building with them, so there's this sort of bad reputation that Silicon Valley receives and that they're hearing a lot in the United States right now, given sort of the humanitarian crisis that we're facing, that you get a bunch of engineers who decide that they know what the solution is going to be and that they're just going to build it for you, right? Like, I, engineer X, have the solution to homelessness. You don't. We've tried that before. And so the best thing to do is to make sure that we are building with people based on what their needs are, based on what their lived experiences are, and that we're bringing, third, all sorts of backgrounds to the table, right? So this is making sure that technology is not a silo, that it's not the very last part of the process, but rather that the person with the technical chops or the engineering skills or the design perspective are at the table from the very beginning, influencing policy and influencing design of any service that we provide.
I'm moving from the public service to the corporate world. what, from your perspective, Victor, has the three main trends that are affecting the transformation of Banco Santander and the financial market in general?
Well, we have several trends that are there and are there to stay, I think, and that we really need to adapt to them and live with them. No, so the first one is we have a changing macro. First of all, I mean, we live through different years where you have to be used to your macro perspective changing in emerging markets, in developed markets, everywhere. So you have to be very dynamic and be able to adapt your business model to that. There is a second huge trend that we are commenting here today, which is digitalization, that basically offers, this is what changes everything, no? In the end, it's not only banking, but it's everything. I mean, today, the importance of entrepreneurs, the importance of startups, etc., is because of technology. There have always been entrepreneurs and startups, etc. But the technology now allows you to do things that before you couldn't imagine. No, and so technology is the second big driver. The third one I would say is and it's linked to the previous one is customers' expectations, because again, driven by technology. Before you could take, in our case, a customer could accept to go to a bank and ask you for something, I don't know, a checkbook or a card or a statement, and you could tell them, I'm sorry, we don't have that here, I will order it and I will deliver it to your home in 3 days. And that is not the case anymore, because people are used to go into Amazon and look at an order that they had like 10 years ago and have all the information there instantly, no? So the expectations on what kind of services they can get and how fast they need to be delivered has changed dramatically, no? And that is completely transforming what we do in all industries.
We have here one of the biggest and most important banks in the world, Banco Santander, but we also have one of the most important fast-moving consumer goods in the world, P&G. Sophie, from your perspective, what do you think is affecting the most the transformation of your company?
Today, overall, is consumer behavior. I mean, that consumer is at the heart for us. Everything is anchored into a superior consumer understanding, digital, and I would say even more than digital in our world, it's mobile. Mobile is not anymore a device. Mobile is a lifestyle shift completely and really amazingly. And then indeed, today consumers are expecting, we have 80% of consumers here in Europe that are searching on their mobile before buying anything. And half of them are expecting to buy in less than 1 hour. So indeed, it's when they want, where they want, at their own terms. And the role of leading brands is to be there with the right experience, service, product, in order to answer this need. This is a complete shift.
And I have a tricky question, especially for the three of you, but especially for you, the first okay. one, which is, how digital do you think P&G is and why?
Good question. I think we are on our own transformation. I think we have started this transformation a while ago, because we are de facto, as you said, we touch 5 billion consumers a day. So big data analytics is our bread and butter. Now it's more fashionable, so you have it everywhere. But so we've started this journey over the last few years. I think that today, overall, what we are doing in a very structured manner is to create an ecosystem in order to accelerate our digital, I would say, transformation. Around three main things, I would summarize. The first one is to create open innovation program, digital program for our people. To get outside and to get and to work together as I would say a horizontal team, small squad team, in an open manner. The second intervention is overall making sure that we are at the forefront of recruiting. Today, the profession, the talents, we talked it this morning a lot. It's a new ball game. In our profession, it's a lot about data analytics, mathematics, modelization, and creativity. This is pretty challenging. So that's the second intervention. And the third one is working with startups. Working with startups because it's a fabulous win-win. What we offer is overall our, I would say, experience, the opportunity to prototype, and the opportunity to scale up when successful. What we get is the opportunity to overall have access to new ideas that are not necessarily, I would say, burdened by the traditional old business model. The opportunity to solve problem that I would say we wouldn't be able to solve by ourselves in a traditional manner. And then last but not least, the culture. So what I've learned in my years in the Startup Nation is impossible is nothing. So for a company like us, that's very important.
We will get back to what you just mentioned about how P&D, among many other companies, are trying now to stop hiring and to start collaborating with this new emerging talent in different ways, right?
Okay.
So going back to Banco Santander, Victor, how do you think, especially here, because Banco Santander is one of the most important one in Spain, how detailed do you think the bank itself is, and why?
I thought I was going to get away with all the questions.
No, but
I answered enough for both of us.
Thanks for the time. But the question is to what extent we believe that our digital proposition understood to the customers is already developed. I think we are on the way. We are not where my vision would be yet. No, to me digital is the new normal, and the vision to me is that we need to allow customers to access their financial services. We call it like a cube. So it's anytime, anywhere, anyhow, and we need to make sure that we have all the catalog of products or services available. If you want to go to a branch, if you're going to go to digital channel, to an app, or to a call center, or however you want to do it. And we are still not there, but we are progressing towards that very rapidly. We around the world, we have a target of having 30 million digital customers for 2018. We are somewhere above 20 at the moment, and we have grown like by 50%, or we have like 50% more over the past couple of years. Every 9 seconds, we get a new digital customer in Banco Santander somewhere worldwide. Nice. Every 9 seconds, so there's two more since I started saying this. and there is, for us, it's very interesting because in the end, if you think about us, we are completely digital because banking is not physical anymore. I mean, there is cash, but it's really small. I mean, it's the cash you get from the ATMs, but all the rest we do is not like these guys in Procter & Gamble. They have to deliver ice creams and shampoo and things like that to people. In the end, we don't deliver anything. We are just a financial services company, and all of that happens electronically. You know? So for us, this is the core, as it is for you as well, because this world is moving, no? But you still have a physical component in the end.
Yes, it's real product, real consumer, not ice cream yet, but we could. I mean, I have some P&G in the room, they would say I'm completely out of my mind. So not yet the ice cream, but
one day.
Yeah, it's not an announcement.
It's too hot.
Yeah, maybe the bank was doing a deal for us, so not yet.
And Victor, what if you had to highlight some main achievements that Banco Santander has somehow done during these 2, 4, 5 years, what would you say that they are the main ones? Like in terms of, for example, adaptation to the new trends, to these new customers, to this new digital era. So for example, we know about the Innoventors program that Banco Santander has about how to engage with the startups. What are the things that you have done during these 5 years, more or less?
I think in the same way Sophie was saying, I mean, for us, the way we work has changed dramatically. It has gone from a very closed environment where we thought that we would manufacture everything we do, we produce everything inside, etc., to a collaboration environment where we know that we need to work with other parties, that we can bring to them a lot of things to the table, they can bring to us, and that has changed dramatically how we work. The driver of that is actually, again, the customer, because that focus has changed. I mean, in the past, we were focused a lot in our results. We are still in our cost efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. And now we added a very important component of customer satisfaction and customer experience. No, and again, we are still progressing in that journey. No, but it has changed completely the focus, and it has opened the way we work with others, in particular startups, fintechs, et cetera.
The good news here, I think, is that there's no way to be 100% digital, I mean, anywhere. So in that sense, I think we're, as you said before, it's not a matter of becoming and then just stop being so. It's a matter of being all the time and evolving and evolving and getting more and more adapted to these new contexts. Vivian, one of the main concerns or challenges that we perceive from the public administration when it comes to adapting itself to this new digital context is that maybe the mindset of or the culture that the people working inside might have, if we compare them to maybe people working in the corporate world, right? Yeah. So what do you think are were the main challenges in your case when it comes to, for example, transforming the mindset of the people working in the White House or in the American kind of like public administration in order to push that innovation, to push the entrepreneurial spirit within the organization?
Yeah, so there are a few things. First, you're exactly right that working with, you know, our career civil servants, with the people who have been doing this for a very long time, and educating them on the ways in which their work could be different or easier for them is, again, an opportunity, but having empathy for the fact that it's also scary. I'm not sure if in Spain it's the same way, but in government, in the American government, there's a real risk of being at fault. And so there's no incentive for taking risks, right? We actually have our chief technology officers for every agency take out personal liability insurance. Can you imagine? You're asked to deliver a service on behalf of the government and hope that it works. And just in case it doesn't, you are held personally liable for it, for hiring your lawyers, for hiring your security if something happens, to the extent where the people, it's literally like when you're launching a new product, you are signing in blood your name on the line on what we call the authority to operate, the ATO, that it will hopefully work, and that if it doesn't, you are responsible, you the CTO, not the government. So there's a lot of fear, and we work around that by, you know, taking small bites out of things. Like I'll use the immigration as an example. We wanted to work with after the 10-year, you know, $1 billion failed experiment of building one form. There was of course a lot of fear for trying that again, and so what we recommended was instead piloting a beta with a small percentage of users for a new form that we built. And what that meant was that we would open up the green card renewal application that a few thousand people apply for every single day, because it's just the renewal of your green card if it got lost or if it was ruined or something. And when the people went to the website to print out the form, as they would traditionally do, print out the form, fill it out, mail it back in, we said, hey, if you're interested, we have this beta, this pilot that is running for 2 days, and you can apply. And after 2,000 people applied, which we got in about 4 days, we closed it entirely. And we said, okay, we now have our 2,000 test case users. We also printed out their applications, just in case. Mm-hmm. And we watched it go through the process, which took a few months. We watched it go through the process of being adjudicated, of making sure that the people were getting a status update. And this bred some confidence within the agency that, A, we were taking baby steps to get there, and that things were not falling apart. Because this is exactly what happened with healthcare.gov. We thought that we could just introduce a new system into the wild and not provide people any alternatives and hope that it worked. And so one thing I'll say, and you were hitting on, A, you know, the process of digital transformation is never ending. But B, it shouldn't be the only option, right? Like when healthcare.gov failed, the biggest problem was not just its failure, it's that they didn't plan for a backup. So there was no way to get a paper form just in case, and there was no customer service hotline to call. So that was really the issue, that people had no other avenue. And I think that, especially in government, paper won't go away altogether, and you're always going to want another method for people to reach you. And so digital should perhaps be the norm, and it should be a great enough solution that people want to use it, but you should always have, you should invest in redundancy as well, and in making sure that you have backups for when things fail, and that people have choices for preference.
And there is, I mean, one of the most important things that you mentioned before is the importance of kind of like pushing people to be part of that change and to get them involved in that. One of the things that we've been talking before about when we talk about talent, about the new kind of like revolution that this new generation is somehow provoking is how companies and governments, we talk about companies and how they should be more kind of like human-centric, more kind of like customer-centric. What about, for example, in your case, about how can you build a government that is 100% citizen-centric in that case? Do you think that's possible, and how?
Yeah, I mean, the people who work for the government are also citizens. You know, they, so you can
but
work.
Do you think they have that in mind once they get to be the government or not?
You know, it's interesting. So I will never forget working for the White House and my parents having a really hard time navigating the IRS. And me thinking, like, if my parents who are well-educated and who have a daughter that works in the government cannot navigate the IRS, then what does that mean for everyone else? What does that mean for the actual 99.9999999% of people who are perhaps coming to the IRS not as English speakers first, not having dealt with them before, and not having somebody who can be like an insider and say, oh, you know, this is actually how it works and let me help you through it. The thing that we found, to answer your question more directly, is that when we went to the government, when we went to the agencies and we said, you know, we'd really like to improve how people apply for financial student aid because the cost of going to college in the United States is so high. You always find your kindred spirit within government who had that idea 20 years earlier, but they didn't have the authority or the flexibility or the latitude to go out and do it themselves. But they know where all of the bodies are buried. They know how to get things done, they just haven't had the air cover to do it. And then, I really saw it as my team's sort of responsibility and goal to be the air cover. It's like when things fail, it's our fault, we're much easier to blame. When we have to go and advocate to the president or to his advisors for some sort of policy change, we're the ones asking for it. And taking the heat off of the agency and off of the people who were doing that work actually brought them to the table faster because it became clear to them that they weren't going to be the ones who lost their jobs, that we were the ones who were taking on that risk for them.
That's really, really interesting, especially because not only in the US, but I think that's something that is happening globally, how governments need to be, to change the way that the role they play in this digital transformation, not only at a public kind of like level, but also at a more kind of like social and kind of like more the society level. Sophie, I'm going back to you, okay, with a very important question because we've been mentioning about how society is changing and evolving all the time. But there is something very important that Victor also mentioned before, which is how customers are changing so, so quickly, right? Mm-hmm. We want things now. We want them how we want it to be. We want things in not in 1 hour. We want it like right now, if it's possible. And not only with trying to personalize things with like the do-it-yourself kind of like trends and all these kind of things. How is P&G, as one of the most important companies in this sector, using technology and hyperconnectivity to better understand their clients and to offer them better products, better services, and better experiences?
So, look, here it's first and foremost indeed to leverage all the tools available in order to understand consumer even better, earlier, and so on. And then in the brand experience we are offering, look, we are using AI, we are using, I would say, Internet of Things, we are using all kind of stuff. I will take two examples maybe to make it very concrete. One is Olay. So Olay is a skincare. So it's not Victor, it's not ice cream, it's just a skincare, okay, brand.
That's why I didn't like the taste, when
I was thinking about that. So it's just a cream. And what we just launched, it was 3 months ago, Olay Skin Advisor. What is Olay Skin Advisor? It's fascinating. It's a technology that is using AI, building having behind it 1 million of data points in order to help the consumer. So, I mean, after understanding what she wanted in that case, that helped the consumer figure out what is the real age of your skin. Because all of us want to look very young and very beautiful and so on. But sometimes there is a disconnect, let's say a positive disconnect, between your age and the age of your skin. Now, it's you would tell me, so what? We don't care. No, we care because you don't treat the skin the same way. Now, you don't treat also the skin and all part of the skin in the same way. Now, what is beautiful with AI and with the Skin Advisor is that it tells you not only the age, but also each part of the skin is scanned and analyzed based on AI and gives you exactly per part of the skin, what to use, what regimen, in order to improve the overall appearance. This with a simple, I would say, iPhone and selfie. So it's really using, I would say, the digital trend and the fact that mobile is part of your life. It's not your device, it's part of your life, just to take a selfie. And then behind this, you have, Sophie, so your skin look 25. Maybe 26, okay, yeah, maybe 26. And you should be careful of your wrinkle here and here and use this product or this regimen twice a day or three times a day, whatever. I think that's transformational. That's transformational because it's a better answer to the consumer expectation, leveraging the tools and not vice versa, and being able to capture this information, of course, that the consumer consent, I mean, well, of course, in order to continue to help her throughout her journey of what to do more. Mm-hmm. So that's an example. You have another one that is also, that you probably know also, it's Oral-B Power Brush. Oral-B Power Brush, over there, it's the use of Internet of Things, so the connection between devices. Here again, with the simple use of your mobile and the electric toothbrush, it talks, and it allows you to really help you understand, first figure out what is exactly that you are doing well or not well when you brush your teeth, and how to improve your oral health, and what kind of practice you should have. It divides your mouth in four, and it tells you, based on how you have, a brush, it gives you back the diagnosis. So this is also another kind of technology used for, in my industry, which is just fast-moving consumer goods, that is mind-changing.
Absolutely. And you were talking about, because all of these things are innovations, are changes that you're kind of like pushing inside the organization to make P&G more adapted to these new customers. One of the things that I wanted to discuss with you is the fact that how did you make the innovation hub in Israel? And I want you to explain and to share with all the audience what what innovation hubs mean for P&G. But how did you make the one in Israel, where you were, the country that you were living at that time, to be one of the most successful ones in the world?
Most successful in the world, it's maybe a big term, but in fact...
We can say it here, it's fine. Here.
Just between us.
Exactly.
Okay, just no between problem. Us, yes, just between us. No, but I think, first and foremost, it was for us, so we just celebrated the 10 years of IHI 2 months ago, mm-hmm. And in fact, for us, it was the first time ever that we were doing a multidisciplinary open innovation center. Mm-hmm. We created open innovation with R&D in the year 2000, so it was a fabulous concept that we created, which is simply the concept of you outsource or you crowdsource, so it depends, few parts of your development and your innovation. This was for R&D. And then in Israel, given what the country offers, especially in terms of tech and in terms of, innovation, then I created this multidisciplinary open innovation center where, in fact, you, based on the problem you have or the challenge you want to answer consumer, you are leveraging inside and also outside. Okay. In order to answer the problem. Not only in R&D, but it can be on process, on algorithm, on demand planning, whatever it is. So that was it. And in fact, so it was a bit new, like anything new, you're a bit alone at the beginning, you know? Mm-hmm. But that's the journey in our world. But when you are resilient, then it works. And it's true that now we are leading in Europe, and Spain, as I said, is at the forefront. This engaging with open innovation across skills and type of expertise in order to accelerate the process from a culture standpoint, but from an outcome standpoint in business.
That's very impressive. So I now get why it became one of the most successful ones in the world. And taking your innovation at P&G, I'm moving to Banco Santander. Victor, one of the things that we mentioned today morning, we had someone from BBVA that is in charge of all these kind of like M&A. I know, we had to do it. We had to do it. And we had the person in charge of all these kind of like M&A process when it comes to the relationship between banks and startups. What is Banco Santander doing, not only when it comes to startups, but also when it comes to transforming the way you kind of like manage talent inside the company? What are the main trends and the main changes that you're seeing in these last years?
Well, in with regards to talent, it's a challenge really, I mean, for banks, because it's something similar to what you were explaining before regarding the risk that you t- uptake, et cetera, no, compared to other sectors. But I mean, if you think about it now, you have all these tech companies around the world, and those are really your competitors. Your competitors in terms of talent are not really banks anymore, are all these firms, no? And you need to gather the talent from there, no? And so we have a certain number of difficulties there. The first one is that if you ask around, what do you want to do with your life? You want to go in Google and go around in bicycles in California, or do you want to work in a bank? That's the first question that you get when you go and try to get talent, no? Then there is, you have all the sorts of the regulation, no? And regulation brings a lot of responsibilities for our directors, et cetera, and risks that they wouldn't have if they go to other sectors. And then there is also compensation that is also quite regulated in our sector, no? So I remember when we hired one of the executives that we have now with us, who is, he came from Amazon, no? And well, the first thing when I meet him and I somehow convince him to come to the bank, I tell him, okay, so how much money do you make? And obviously he made way more money in Amazon, no? So I kind of imagine a way to pay him that, okay, I pay you this and then a bonus and then I give you a coffee every morning and I managed to create something that somehow gets appealing, no? And he goes, okay, fine, let's do it. And there is one more small detail that I didn't tell you, and it's that, you know, in banking we get our bonuses deferred for 5 years, so you get your money 5 years after. And the guy was, I mean, in the end he thought like he was doing some sort of charity, like coming with us, and he came, but it's hard to compete in, because we have very, very different rules, no? So what we are doing is we are making a special effort to bring in some special people that we are kind of seeding in different parts of the company, and they kind of create the environments that are more attractive mm-hmm. for this kind of people. We are also working with regulators sometimes to find ways to compensate these people in a way that is equivalent to what they would get in these places. And then we are doing initiatives like we do with Santander Innoventures, where we collaborate with startups, etc. And they also help us bring talent inside the bank, no? But it's not an easy task. I mean, in many sectors, compared to what they can do in these tech companies, it's hard. But we have a very strong focus in this. When we talk about our priorities for, I don't know, 2025, people is one of them. We have three, and one is customer loyalty, the second is technology, and the third one is people. So it's clearly at least 33% of our priorities, no? But it's not easy. Mm-hmm.
And just before we finish up this last panel, I want you to, like, each of you to kind of like express or at least communicate the key kind of like the main point that you will highlight is the thing you need to do to transform your organization. If we had to kind of like summarize in only one thing, what would be the your priority when it comes to transformation? If you want to start, Sophie, I know it's a very easy question, but...
Yeah, very easy, but I think it will say three words that are connected. Superior consumer understanding, so consumer. I mean, this is a starting point, and the second one is talent. Okay. Top priority, we said creativity and tech, okay? And the third one is a new level of leadership.
Great. Victor?
Can I say three as well? Okay. Let me pick one. Let me pick one. I told you three before. So three would be customer loyalty, technology, people. But if I have to pick one, I would frame it by saying that the culture. We need to really transform the culture. It's not that our culture was before was wrong. We need people to understand all what we are talking about and really embrace it and change the bank from each individual. No, we call it simple, personal, and fair. We say these three words about the bank that we want to create. Obviously, we cannot say that we are a bank, simple, personal, and fair completely, but we are progressing towards there, and it's our aspiration, no? And if we make people understand where we want to get and in the way how we want to do things to get there, things will follow, no? That, to me, that's probably the most important.
Thank you so much. Vivian?
So mine would be, you know, going back to root problems, which is how I think about things. Mine would be collaboration. Really, embracing the notion that none of our sectors can solve every aspect of every problem on their own, and that there is a lot to learn, whether it's about culture or people or best practices or embracing technology that we accomplish through collaborations and partnerships with other sectors and other industries and other organizations. We see this a lot. I'll give an example with banking. There's a lot that the government can learn around identifying fraud from banking. Why would we try to relearn everything on our own when we can take the best practices of the financial sector over the last 20 plus years in identifying fraud? So for me, it goes back to collaboration.
Okay. So it's been, I think that the conclusion, I mean, taking into account everything you've said, is that transformation is an option. It is a reality that we need to embrace and we need to make the most out of it. It's been a great pleasure for me to moderate this panel, and I hope you enjoyed the experience and that you took at least the entire audience some key points about how we can transform everything we do and to make it easier and to enjoy all these opportunities. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.